Blog Talk Radio. Sometimes I have my phone on speaker, and it gives all this feedback. So I had to beg off and then call back in. So I'm not sure whether it went streaming or that you heard it. But so this week, by the way, okay, I got to give you my update. I'm going to go to a commercial because I know, I feel bad about not having to be able to eat my favorite brownie right now, but,
What would you do to earn brownie points? How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy Tale Brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calbo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies. And that's no fairy tale.
Yeah. And to boot, for Valentine's Day, I could still get them. Valentine's Day. Oh, they got some sales going on. That's right. And particularly Valentine's Day is when you can get, as I keep repeating myself, they're enrobed brownies. Yes, brownies that are enrobed with the dark Belgian chocolate. Yeah, well, as you all know, I'm on Nutrisystem. Yes, there is some chocolate. There are chocolate things in there. I have to admit, okay. It's chocolate. I mean, I'm eating chocolate. No, it's not Belgian chocolate. I mean, but at least it's chocolate. So at least I can satisfy my chocolate craving. On the desserts. None of the food is chocolate, just desserts. That's it. It's my just dessert. And the desserts, I haven't tried. There's a chocolate pudding that I'm going to try. And there's a chocolate drops that kind of look like chocolate kisses kind of thing. And it was satisfying. The thing is, I got to lose weight. Yeah, that's it. You know, got to knock it off. And the calories are putting on, and the weight has been coming from, okay. The weight's been coming from, well, age, okay. Age, I'm going to turn 60 this year. And so you kind of figure female, the hormones and all that other crap. And, sitting around all the time. I'm sitting at the computer. I'm sitting to watch TV. Or I'm sitting on a bus. I'm sitting on a subway. Or I get to someplace and I sit down. Yeah, even on the subway or the bus, I try standing up. There's always somebody offering me their seat. I tell them, please, I've been sitting all day. I need to stand. I hope they understand. And so, and you know, I've been doing some exercise stuff. They have a tape. It's a DVD. DVD. And the tape is a walking exercise, power walking. And I can't keep quite up with, can't quite keep up yet with their fastest pace. So I'm doing it like pace one and two, and going to do that like every day. And then I can build up to pace number three to walk for the 1 mile. And I have a treadmill, and I just do the treadmill and like walk for another 20 minutes, 30 minutes, just to keep my metabolism going. What I have for breakfast. What in the world did I have for breakfast? I know I had something there. Oh, yeah, I had the flakes, like the corn flakes. It's there. Oh, no, it wasn't the corn flakes. It was like the checkerboard kind of cereal kind of thing, you know. And I added milk to it, and I added cherries to it. And let's say that was breakfast, and I'm making sure I have enough water. Hopefully I won't have to pee in the middle of this interview. And if I do, then I just go to a break. Simple as that. To pee or not to pee? That is the question. So let's see. So what's also coming up, as I spoke on Thursday, the JPD program with the NFL and the New York Sharks. In New Jersey. However, it's open to anybody who wants to make their way here. Girls ages 13 to 17. And you can learn how to play football. It's really cool. It's free. And if you get into, I guess it's they have bus service, free busing from a place in the Bronx, Brooklyn, and Manhattan. And so if you just get your ass here, we can get you out there. I'm going to be out there. I'm going to be out there checking it out. I'm going to write an article about it. That's really cool. Cool. And speaking of cool, yes, it's cool jazz. That's the, I guess, what the station. When you hear Al Jarreau, it's always a cool jazz station. And I got three of his songs. I'll be playing two others. I'll probably play the first one later on to make up for in case it wasn't heard. Although I think to me the song "Morning" not the most popular. The one I hear the most, I think, is "Morning." Yeah, I mean now the brain is going, having a brain fart right now, you know, like now I suddenly don't remember "Morning." Okay, but anyway, we'll be talking about many of Al's songs, some you know, some you don't, and I'm waiting. Well, let's see. I want to take a peek. Let's see. I might have something. Let's see. I have a friend who sends me shit. Funny shit. Let's see if I can have. Why is this one? Tax season. Tax season. Let's see what this one is about. Tax season. Okay, I open it up here. Oh, this is probably no. Okay, no, this is probably something to be seen. No, I'm okay. Let's. Oh, I see. Okay, I know what that was. Wait, I'll get it again. It said on here, well, I'll open it up again. I know what that was about. Okay. Uh-huh. Okay. Now, it says on here, tax refund, Revenue America News release. Due to the recent U.S. economic problems, the United States Treasury Department and IRS have been instructed to refund 70% of the tax surplus to American taxpayers in January 2009. Average refund will be between $5,000 to $8,500 for a married couple and $3,000 to $4,000 for a single person. Click here to listen to the official proclamation and instructions as to how to apply for this refund online. And now I'll click it. And then it's a little kitten with his big smile on its face laughing. Yeah, well, okay. Now we understand. I thought so. I had a funny feeling. So now I have Al Jarreau on the air right now, and let's talk to him.
Hi, this is Al.
You heard that, huh?
Oh, you are so silly.
I know.
Oh, my goodness, you'd fit in perfectly in my band.
Well, thank goodness I also get emails, funny emails, but that was a good one. I really enjoyed it. Yes.
Bless your heart.
Yes.
Oh, you know how to laugh. That's so important, my goodness.
Yes, that is.
Oh, no headaches or backaches when you know how to laugh.
Oh, that's true. It does relieve.
It relieves stuff. It relieves stuff. Yes.
Yeah, I actually used to do. I used to actually be hired to laugh.
Come on.
Yeah, really. Yes, I was a comedian. And,
oh, God.
And you,
that's great.
Well, you know that in show business, there's always the things you do for publicity stunts. I had these
well,
crazy...
Where were you doing stand-up?
Oh, I was doing, actually, most of my stuff was real. I do character stuff, like I do scenes from The Wizard of Oz and stuff like that. But I had a comedy partner. His name is Joel Brooks. He's still in the business. And we would find these people. I mean, we were like 14, 15. We'd find these people. Everybody wanted to, manage us or, you know, whatever. And they came up with all these weird things for publicity. And I just, well, you know.
did you ever hang out at the Improv?
You know, I have to tell you, I never hung at the Improv because by the time I was dealing with the Improv, I said, you want to pay me? And they said, no. I said, well, why do I want to do a show for you? they always take advantage of us.
The Improv was just known to be a place to kind of get the bugs out of your routine. Nobody got paid there, and God, it was. but they got paid later.
way later.
I used to hang out at the Improv. God,
yeah.
In those days.
In New York or out in California?
No, in New York, the very first one. Yeah, so I'm talking about 69. Danny Aiello was the doorman Bette Midler was there, David Klein, Jimmy Walker, Belushi, John Belushi, David Brenner. God, the list of people who were hanging out there was just incredible. And Julio Martinez and I were the comic relief.
Were you?
Yeah. Julio was a guitar player, and we were traveling and playing together. We were at that time we were doing Danger Fields and Playboy Club in New York.
Cool.
Yeah. So I just wondered if you might have been around during those days.
I try to get gigs. What? One of the things I personally found is I didn't have to rehearse my stuff in front of an audience. My head said it's either funny or it's not.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's my responsibility to communicate it 100% that it's funny, and so I just when I got a gig, I said, oh, "There it
well,
is."
Well, bless your heart.
You realize the difference, by the way, when you're between with a singer and a comedian. With a singer, I mean, they'll applaud for a singer. People can they'll applaud for a singer at the end of a song. It's
right.
Always, you know, or the beginning of a song when they know the song. You ever notice that?
Yeah.
When they think when they start to realize they know the song, they're not applauding for you.
Yeah, they're
applauding for themselves because they remember the damn song.
Yeah.
Oh, look, I remember that song. Let me applaud for myself. I don't have Alzheimer's. Oh, good. But with a comedian, you have to get, you have to keep getting the laughs,
Yeah, it's an uphill climb for a guy who's standing there telling a story thinking that it's funny and presumes that it's going to be funny for the audience. It's a different gig.
Oh, yeah.
Once you're down the road a little ways, they see your face and they laugh.
Yeah.
You know? But it takes a while to get there. It's an amazing presumption, I'm going to make you laugh.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, it's amazing. And it's wrought with insecurities. We got them too. We singers
have them too.
We singers
have
them.
Well, show business, that's the thing. But you realize, show business is the only business that they take advantage, that they play games of, I'll allow you to perform. We won't pay you, but we'll allow you to perform for the privilege of letting other people see you. And by the way, everybody else has to pay.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Now don't get too upset about that.
Well, you're not getting paid.
You'll wake up with headaches and a hump in your back. don't get too upset about that. That's the way it's always been.
Yeah, right. And or the one we'll pay you $2 a person.
It's not likely to change very soon.
Which I have to tell you, I always thought was humorous because I thought to myself, if you don't have a reputation of having good entertainment, that's your problem. I need to bring my friends. They're about to recite all my material by now.
Hey, Merle, are you recording this? This is a great talk that we're having. But we better talk about the Nokia Theater. I'm going
to
come there
and do
some love songs and celebrate Valentine's Day.
Yes.
I kind of have a little tradition going with the city now. I think I've done Valentine's in New York somewhere for the last several years. I think at least 4 or 5 years I've come and done Valentine's Day in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great. People kind of look for me and they start going, it's almost Valentine's Day. I was on the I must be on the way now. And they get out there, we're in this love together. And start rehearsing to sing on the chorus, because I make them sing on the chorus. I'm not doing this alone. This song has new meaning these days. The world needs to be singing this. We're in this love together. We got to stop fighting each other, start taking care of each other, be more compassionate. New meaning. I'm coming to sing it in New York.
Oh, good. That's great. That's
And Ashford and Simpson are going to sing Solid as Barack.
Solid as Barack.
Isn't that wonderful?
Are they really?
Yeah, they've re-recorded it,
That's going to be a hoot. Oh, that's
they've
cool.
re-recorded the song, and it's the song is taking off again. Yeah, that song. Solid as Barack. That's fantastic, huh?
Oh, wow.
What a brilliant idea. Whoa.
I got to tell you, though, the poor man is going to have a lot of pressure if he screws up, boy.
I think that already he's won. I think he's won in a lot of ways already. You know, I think people understand that we're in deep tea in this country, and it started before him. Of course, the other side of the aisle is trying to blame all our troubles on him already. The banks failed because because of Barack, right?
You're right.
The automobile companies failed because of Barack, right? The other side of the aisle will be blaming him for everything, but I think people will be able to see through it, understand that it's going to take a while to get back on our feet. But you know, we've regained some status in the world community. We've repaired some bridges already.
Yeah.
Just with electing this guy.
Oh,
just
sure.
With electing him. People around the world are going, whew, we thought you were gone, America. Maybe there's a chance. Let's talk. The door is open. Come on, let's sit down. Hey, we haven't been there in a long, long time. We've destroyed goodwill around the world and have the world looking at us kind of sideways, going, let's put handcuffs on these people. They are not to be trusted. And they were right. We were not to be trusted.
Yeah.
And we got a lot of repairing to do to get beyond that mistrust.
Yeah, that's quite true. But I want to talk about your career. We want to lighten it up here.
Okay.
So you were... What was the first song you ever sang?
Probably a song that went, smile, 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 just keep right on a smiling. Smile, 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 and clouds will pass away. Smile, 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 it's better far than pining. You'll never mind the shadows on a sunny day. 3 or 4 years old.
Oh, God.
Jesus wants me for a sun, beep, to shine for him each day. Was my first singing church music.
Uh-huh.
And those little secular songs that had real churchish kinds of meaning.
Well, you come from a background that your family sang?
Yeah, well, we were Seventh-day Adventists. My dad was a Seventh-day Adventist minister. He had stopped ministering by the time I came along, but he insisted that we go to church, and so the six kids all stayed in church and sang in the choir and sang church music. That was the first music that I did,
And then you went to
my mother was a church pianist and played for us. Yeah. And what did you just say?
I was going to say, and then when you went on, I mean, then you didn't sing. Then you went to like high school, college, and whatever. And
oh yeah, well
I sang right through
grade school. My mother would come play for me at PTA meetings, and I would sing at little between the double features in theaters, talent shows organized by this guy in Milwaukee named Ralph Krause. And nice German guy on the south side of Milwaukee, and he had a thing going on. He'd organize talent shows between double features, and my dad would sing and play a musical saw, and I would get up and sing, and win $50 for second prize or first prize. That augmented a salary of $75 a week when my dad was at that point a welder in heavy industry. Yeah.
Wow.
All of that kind of stuff. And then sang doo-wop on the street corner, starting in sixth grade before it was called doo-wop.
Wow.
Four guys and a gal walking to school in the morning, 35, 40-minute walk to school, singing doo-wop songs, snapping our fingers, singing doo-wop songs, books under one shoulder, bag lunch in the other hand, and going to school and singing doo-wop. Get to school and go sing in the a cappella choir. I know every musical that they ever did. I'll sing you Oklahoma right now. My boy Bill. yeah. All of that stuff, you know, sang in the a cappella choir, and then went to college and organized a singing group there, patterned along the lines of Lambert, Hendricks, and Ross, and the Four Freshmen, and the High Lows, and did that kind of music for 4 years in college, and began to get to sing a little bit in nightclubs, and continued doing that all the way through grad school, and starting to explore and expand my book, the songs, the programs and kind of music that I did, and finally went to work as a rehab counselor in San Francisco, and was singing two or three nights a week. At that point, I had met George Duke. He was a student at San Francisco Conservatory, taking a degree in music, and had a trio at a club called the Half Note. And I walked in there on a Sunday afternoon when they did matinees and invited horn players and singers to get up and jam, and I sang one afternoon. And it was very early on in my living in that area. I just moved there in 64. And the club owner came over and said, "Come on, I want you to sing here with this trio." And I started singing there. And George Duke and I played and sang there weekends for 4 years through 68 when that club closed. Days I was working as a rehab counselor.
Right.
Yeah. And that club closed in 68. And I made the decision to do music full-time in 68. And haven't looked back. Really, it worked out. There was a lot of nervousness on my part, you know, about whether it could work, but it did.
Now, is that when you met? I got something to say. You met Quincy Jones then?
I met Quincy Jones around that time, but we didn't get involved doing any music at that point. It was much later that he invited me to come and sing on some records that he was working on. But we did meet really, really early on, and he heard me sing and encouraged me no end to keep on doing what I was doing, and I did.
Did you write your own music?
Yes, I was. That was the change that began to occur at the time when I left rehabilitation counseling and began to do music full time. I found myself with some time to think about music, and I began to write. That was 1968-69, and I began to write with this guitar player named Julio Martinez. He and I became a team. We walked into a music room, and he had his guitar, and we sang, played for the people that night, and they hired us, and it was the beginning of a 3 or 4 year run of 4 or 5 nights a week that we played there in Sausalito, a place called Gatsby's. And yes, that's when I started writing. I wrote We Got By, title song for my first album, during that time period, and wrote a song called Raggedy Ann, wrote a song called Susan's Song, and some of the things that appeared on that first album, We Got By, during that period of time, working duo. And came to New York, played the Playboy Club and Rodney Dangerfield's The Duo.
Cool.
And hanging out at the Improv. The comic relief. Here comes Al and Julio. The comic relief. There's Danny Aiello at the door. He was the doorman.
I guess I should have gone after all, huh?
We were doing what we could.
Yeah.
And, yeah, we were doing what we could. Any place that you had a chance to stand up and work the bugs out of your thing, you took
it.
It was a great day, and I'm so glad that the Improv continues to have that tradition and continue to do that. It's a real huge successful business by now, but it spawned a lot of clubs that continued that tradition that were even smaller clubs and less well known, where people got up and did comedy. It's been that format is working and has been working for a long time. It's terrific.
Well, it's probably, I think I think it's easier for a singer,
mm-hmm,
to showcase than a comedian.
I think music has been a favored child, somewhere between favored child and spoiled brat of the arts, you know?
Yeah.
On the other hand, this laughter business is right at its side. You know, there's such natural things for coming out of the, you know, the human spirit and psyche, you know. We've been laughing a long time too, and
So now you got three categories. You won. You netted Grammy Awards in 3 different categories.
Yeah, I think I'm the only recipient that's ever won in 3 different categories, and real satisfying for me.
Where do you see, like, the difference between in your style, in some jazz and pop and R&B?
A melange. What is that word? A melange. It's the music is mixed up. When you're listening to me, you're hearing R&B and pop, and I'm weaving the jazzy approach throughout that. You know, there are some songs that I do that are specifically jazz songs, like like Groovin' High, that's a bebop song, like Take Five, like Dave Brubeck song Take Five, and I recorded Chick Corea Spain, very specifically jazz songs, but that's about 2% of the music that I've recorded. 98% of the music that I've recorded is this kind of mix of things with jazz, with a jazzy approach and improvisational sense weaved throughout the stuff. So it doesn't really break down into now I'm going to do a pop song, now I'm going to do an R&B song, now
right.
I'm going to do a jazz song. You know,
well,
Mornin'. Mornin' is a pop song.
I think that's
song.
The most popular song.
Huh?
I mean, I think that's the most, to me, that's the most, not popular, that's the most heard song, I think.
Well, I certainly not of all the songs written in the world, but it's pretty high up there.
Of yours,
on
I mean.
My list of things
yeah.
of that people listen to, and it's a popish song, but it's got these jazzy overtones and undertones in it,
right?
And so does "We're in This Love Together." So that's how it does not kind of break down and divide itself. Into the three separate categories, but
right.
the Grammys likes categories, and so I've won in three different categories now for specific pieces of music that had either a more jazzy or R&B or pop appeal.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, now, Roof Garden.
Uh-huh.
Let's hear a little.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's it. That's it. That's it. She's a little supposed to get this and get that other. That's it. That's a desert baby. Hey, Mom. What's your mama going to say? You finally let your father like this guy.
Sing me, Mom, 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 sing in the garden.
So that's which is completely different from, let's hear, like, Rainbow in Your Eyes.
Yeah.
And so, like, but it always has the syncopation.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Always has the syncopation that comes out of R&B and jazz mixing themselves together.
Yeah. Because I know, like, here is 101.9.
Yeah.
Yes. it's interesting of the in terms of being on that station where I would hear it, not just like I have it set in my house, like that's what I wake up to in the morning. It's just
uh-huh.
the perfect music to wake up to. It's not screaming rock and roll and it's not music that's going to put me back to sleep.
Right.
but I know, like, for instance,
I think there are a lot of people who appreciate it just for those same music, you know. Maybe there's rock and roll time later on in the day, you know, but in the morning when you wake up, there's some things that feel like that are just great get up and get going songs, you know,
right.
and material and that format, just provides it for a lot of people.
Yeah, it does. See, personally, I don't like the kind of jazz. There's two types of jazz for me. It's
uh-huh.
the jazz that you do, And then there's the other jazz called Let's Show Off Our Instruments.
So I hear you. I hear you.
You know
what? Yeah. I describe it in similar ways myself. And jazz as a form lost a lot of people. Jazz was a music that people danced to. When it became this, as you described it, let's show off our instrument, really self-indulgent, heady kind of bebop, people went right straight to Little Richard and Chuck Berry and Bill Haley and kept on dancing.
Yep.
And that happened. Jazz left its earlier bearings, you know, and became a different thing. So yeah, there are different kinds of jazz, and the wonderful thing about jazz is there's room for all of that.
Now, what's your latest CD?
Latest CD is Love Songs.
Okay.
A Love Song CD. Yeah, that's that came. I guess it's almost a year now. But the one before that was the one that I did with George Benson, and George and I toured the world together, on stage together, and doing the music from this CD called Giving It Up. It was amazing. So we are celebrating Love Songs right now, and fits real good with Valentine's Day, and we're going to come to the Nokia and have a ball. Ashburton Simpson will be there.
Are you going to be bringing CDs to sell it?
Am I going to? I'm sorry.
Are they going to have your music to sell?
I don't know. I'm not sure. That's become a more and more difficult thing to pull off. That's always been kind of a difficult one, because the venues have taken such a big rake off of the sales, upwards of 15-20%. At some point, it doesn't make sense for the artist to lose money selling CDs at the venue. Yeah, so I'm not sure that that's going to happen. There are some places where I go and play, especially abroad. Where it's a good enough break even that it makes sense to sell CDs to people on the spot. That is a great place to sell CDs.
Mm-hmm.
When they hear the music, they go and buy it, and it's just a shame that certain kind of business practices have put it out of reach. That's such a disfavor to the artist and his audience. So I don't know. I hope we're able to do something of the sort. We'll see.
But you got a perfect venue. People could go right across the street over to Virgin Records.
Well, that may be the connection then. Merle, I'm kind of late, so we need to do a last question or two, and then I'm going to talk to some more folks in New York.
Okay. Well, the question I just have, like, do you have any favorite places you've played, or better yet, what have been your favorite songs to do?
My favorite song?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
If I said Take Five.
That Take Five is one of them.
Oh, okay.
Take Five is one of them. Take Five has a way of it takes on a life of its own. every group that's played in with Al Jarreau, every, you know, what am I trying to say? The band behind me changes from time to time.
Uh-huh.
With different players. I think I'm lucky enough to have players who come and stay for a while, but I was doing Take Five with a guitar player, and it's evolved and it grows and becomes a new thing every night. It's just written with that kind of freedom in it, and we have found those freedoms in it, and the audience recognizes it and sees it from night to night. If they followed me around, the person in the audience would be able to say, "God, it was so different than the way you did it last night." Yeah,
and
yeah,
I guess
that's
you'll,
the jazzy part.
And you're going to do that on the 15th?
Yeah, we'll do it.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Well, I appreciate you calling in.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your time, darling. What a nice chat.
And I might see you if they let me go backstage.
All right, come on then.
All right.
Yeah, ask for Joe Gordon.
Joe Gordon.
Joe Gordon is my tour manager. He'll be there.
Okay, I will.
Joe Gordon.
Great.
All right,
Merle. Thanks so much, Al.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah, that was Al Jarreau. Yes, as you probably figured out. That's so great. I'm looking forward to seeing the show. I'm going to take a quick break here by playing. Now you can hear the entire song. Let's hear Roof Garden.
Oh, yeah. That's it. That's it, baby. Hey, Mom, what's your mama gonna say?
You finally let your father like this guy.
Sing me, Mom, 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 sing in the garden. Sing me, Mom, Mom, go dance up on the roof. Sing me, Mom, 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 sing in the garden. Up on the roof. Does anyone wanna go waltzing in the garden? Does anyone wanna go dance up on the roof? Does anyone wanna go waltzing in the garden? Does anyone wanna go dance up on the roof?
Leaning on.
1977, I think he's got his first Grammy here. It says as best singer and for best jazz vocal performance. He got both for his live album called Look to the Rainbow, Live in Europe. 1978, his third Grammy for best jazz vocal performance. He got in 1970 for the album All Fly Home. That doesn't make sense. He got in 1970. Okay. I'm just reading notes. It's not from the PR. This I got off the internet. Let's see here. And so here, that's it. We got here. 1987, the chartbreaker Moonlighting, title song of a two series. I don't know what a two-seray, what they, oh, I guess, oh, it's not from the internet, TV series, I couldn't figure two, T-U-S-E-R-I-E, TV series, okay, yeah, so, anyway, so again, it's Nokia Theater on West 44th Street on February 15th, along with Ashford and Simpson. Just Google his name, and I'm sure it'll come up on where to buy the tickets. And after the show, well, the week after, I'm doing a show, the next show here on the 12th. I'm not going to do this Thursday. So the next show I'll be on the radio is on the 12th, and the following week I'll tell you all about how the show went. And maybe with a little luck, maybe I can get Ashford and Simpson on a show prior. So, yeah, I'm leaving you. I'm not going to stay hanging until 4:30. I'm going to wind up the show here. Besides, Mallory has been meowing at me again. And so we'll talk to everybody. See everybody. Well, you can go to my if you go to blog Merle's World .blogspot.com, you can like get more info as to what I'm doing and see some of my YouTubing. Yes. You get to see me do scenes from The Wizard of Oz. So until the 12th. Say hello to everyone. Say goodbye to everyone. I know. You're the host of the show. I understand. I got it.